I'd like to apologize to you gentlemen for referring to you all as podcasters. You taught me a valuable life lesson in life. A lot of hearts coming up next.
Haven't Seen It with Tim Sestito and Tommy Tevney. Hello, everybody. Welcome on in. Thank you all so much for listening today. This is a podcast where one of us is watching a movie for the very first time. And today, that's both of us.
Yeah,
Three of
I
us.
think all three of us, yeah.
All three of us. Yeah, as the Lynch guy on the podcast, this is my first time watching it. And we had originally scheduled to do the original Nosferatu and Nosferatu 2024, but due to the passing of David Lynch last Thursday, we felt it would be right to honor him on the podcast with one of his lesser known movies. Where did you guys find it? Because I had to sail the high seas of the internet to even get my
Oh,
hands on this thing.
this was actually very interesting. By the way, what's up, guys? Officer Steve, big
Yeah,
underscore.
welcome back to the pod.
Y'all
Welcome
already
back to
know.
this.
Y'all already
Steve,
know.
Steve's been on the pod so many times, I don't even need to intro him.
You're like our third chair at this point, practically.
All right. Well, that's kind of what I was aiming for. I've finagled my way in here somehow. But anyway, I found it through Reddit, and I want to see if you guys found it the exact same way, because I looked on every, like, you know, I basically, like, thanks to Tommy, I now have the Affinity Gauntlet of streaming services. So like,
Exactly.
so
Person being friends with me, I'm like,
I
here's
have
fucking
them.
everything, man.
Yeah, and all you gotta do is like pay like $5 a month. I'm like, I'm good. So like, I couldn't find it on any of them, right? And so I, you know, normally I just Google, like, you know, Wild at Heart streaming. Couldn't find it anywhere. And it took me to a Reddit thread where somebody posted a link of something. It was called like archive.org. And it's like /browse/wild-at-heart. And I basically just kind of casted that to my television. And that's how I watched the movie. Funny enough, what ended up happening was, I was just watching it because, you know, David Lynch had just died. I'm a big Nick Cage fan. And I texted Tommy and I'm like, dude, have you seen this movie? Just because I knew it'd be like right up his alley. And he, as I'm texting him, he literally texted me a picture of the Blu-ray copy that he had bought. So I'm like, okay, so now this is meant to be. The writing's on the wall. We
Well, to
have
be
to do
fair,
it.
I didn't buy the Blu-ray. I rented it from the video store and I still have not returned it. So a few days later, I'm going to return it tomorrow, but save just for today. But still, regardless, like, what a movie. I mean, I wanted to watch a bunch of Lynch movies ever since his passing. You know, I didn't really watch most of his stuff until, honestly, like the last like 3 years, when Tim, you dragged me to go see Twin Peaks at the
The
Alamo.
fire we saw Fire
Fire Walk
Walk
with
with
Me.
Me. Yeah,
There
we
you
were
go.
debating doing that on the podcast, but we were like, ooh, might be a little too early, because this is like
Yeah.
what our
See, how
like
did we break down a Lynch movie back then when we were starting early and we're like, we were covering fucking Home Alone 2
we were
and
essentially
beating every plot point?
and we yeah we were well we were a little bit past that, but we were just so awkward and like fumbling, and then we were like, well, we gotta grow the show. Twin Peaks, Fire Walk with Me, that we could either cover the Batman or Twin Peaks, Fire Walk with Me. But so I kind of regret not covering it on the podcast, because I do love that movie. Yeah, Tommy, I kind of want to just, you know, start this podcast just on Lynch itself, since because you had watched the original Twin Peaks run, correct, at some point.
Yeah, I've seen all of season one, and I think a little bit of season two, but this is also
Probably
like 9 years ago.
until they resolve the murder, and then you click next on the next episode, and then you're like,
What murder?
what the fuck? Well, for you, because I know you had texted me about a couple of Lynch films that you saw, like, what had kind of like spoken to you about his like work, you know, since we started covering him on the podcast? Have you like grown to appreciate him anymore?
I definitely think as I've watched more of his movies, I've appreciated him more and more. You know, when we first covered like Mulholland Drive, I think it was kind of just like a meme of us, like of me just saying like, I'm never watching this movie, because we used to say that over and over and over again. Like, movie nights, Timmy would be like, we're watching Mulholland Drive as one of his picks. I'd be like, fuck that. No, we're not watching Mulholland Drive. Instant veto. Get the fuck out of here. But I watched Mulholland Drive. I need to rewatch it because it was very confusing. I watched Twin Peaks Firewalk with me. I was like, this is incredible. And a movie I'll get into of like what I just watched recently, I watched A Straight Story over the weekend. And that was like just such a beautiful, like heartwarming movie that was just very straightforward for David Lynch and not a lot of his dream logic stuff that he's known for. And this way is just more straight ahead and just like a simple story of a guy who wants to see his brother died, is dying. So,
Well,
and
you're
now what a
speaking
heart.
Japanese to me, just so you guys know. I really didn't watch any. I haven't really watched much of David Lynch while he was alive. And
You're like, I was not aware that I was supposed to watch a lot of David Lynch.
I'm just like, I don't know how drunk Tommy is, or if fucking like this is these are actual movie titles, but
Yeah, I mean, a combination of both.
yeah, dude. Basically, my only Lynch walking into this movie is. Pretty much, what would Jack do? I mean, I haven't even seen Eraserhead.
Eraserhead, we were talking about when we were like, which Lynch movie should we cover? We were debating Eraserhead. I've watched Eraserhead. I didn't love it because it was quite confusing, but I've heard it's one of those movies if you go and see it in a theater, that's when you go do it. So I think if we could ever time a theatrical release of that, I believe the 50th anniversary is coming up, I would want us to go see it in theaters to then discuss it, because I would rather have that kind of experience versus trying to like watch it on my TV and all
Understand it again.
the distractions
Yeah.
of it. Yeah, for me, I remember watching N Netflix and finding Twin Peaks. And Steve, if you've never watched any David Lynch before, as except for this, I'm guessing, I would highly suggest starting with Twin Peaks. The pilot episode of that is probably my favorite thing he's done. Like, I was so entranced by
Oh,
it.
yeah.
The first, like, I just so in you know what did I watch this week? I'm going to pivot and say not a movie, but I'm going to talk about a show, because I rewatched the pilot of Twin Peaks for the first time in a couple of years, and I forgot how powerful that is, man. The first
Oh, yeah.
15 minutes of it is jaw-dropping. Like,
Yeah, I believe you guys.
they
Yeah. I
just
mean,
so
I watched the first episode, like the first half of it on Friday too, and like just struck by like the score alone. I mean, just that just so powerful in itself. Just the whole like atmosphere of everything of like the small town ethos of Twin Peaks before everything goes to shit. And just like the human center at the heart of just characters reacting to a tragedy. It's just so striking.
yes, definitely. And like, there's one thing I want to point, and I don't even know if it's a spoiler because they find Laura's body in the first 2 minutes of the episode, but they flip it over and they say the name Laura Palmer, and then there's just such a it's a hard cut to the mother being like, "Laura, Laura, time for breakfast," and it's just like, oh, okay, this is where this is going. But I think for me, it just like made me really curious, because I like watched this pilot, and for television, especially 90s television, it was so out of left field and so not the typical case. Like, this was a show that was based around solving a murder with like mysticism kind of getting tossed in later episodes. And I just was so entranced by that. So then I ended up watching Eraserhead, Elephant Man, Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, like going through
Blue
a lot
Velvet,
of.
I heard, is insanely fucked up. I
Yeah, that's
see
the
that
movie
in
what
there.
we covered on the pod like back in September, another Lynch movie where like I immediately was just like, okay, I'm getting this guy more and more. I see why he's becoming more and more popular. Because I think if you start off as more confusing work, you're like, all right, what the fuck is this pretentious bullshit? Which is what I thought at first, like when I was watching some stuff, and then I realized like, no, it's more than that. It's like, you know, there's a lot more to it. It's not just like fucking like arty farty, not whatsoever.
Yeah. That's the thing, man, and that's like that was my initial impression when I watched What Would Jack Do? But like, it wasn't like me thinking like he's pretentious. Like, you know, like David Lynch is just known to be like weird, quirky, and like, you know, he'll take any plot, he'll make it just insanely weird, creepy, and uncomfortable. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because like it's something that I'd never seen before, and you have like a whodunit murder mystery between a talking monkey and himself. And it's captivating for what it is, especially considering it's a short, like, you know. So I'm like, yeah, no, this was weird, but I definitely liked it and I need to get more into his stuff. And then after he passed, I'm like, okay, I love Nicolas Cage movies. So, like, I was actually talking to my dad about it, and my dad's like, start with this movie and then go into Blue Velvet. Because he's like, because Blue Velvet's like real fucked up. So, like, you kind of get a sense to like kind of what he's about. And then get into Blue Velvet. That's like a nice transition. So if I were to recommend any, that's what I would do. But
Well, yeah, it's like for example, like my girlfriend, she watched Blue Velvet, hated it. She watched Wild at Heart. She's like, all right, this movie rocks. This movie goes down a lot smoother than Blue Velvet does.
it's funny because you said that you wouldn't watch Blue Velvet with your girlfriend, and then you ended up doing it.
No, I did not watch Blue Velvet with my girlfriend.
Oh no. Wild at Heart. I'm sorry.
I ended up watching it with her, so but yeah.
Yeah.
No,
You said that you wouldn't for the same reason, but then you were like, you know what? I have a quarter to fill. We were watching
I think the difference in, and I think it's something that's across all of Lynch's work, is there's a genuine love for America and Americana. It's prevalent in everything that he does. And especially like small town America and the darkness underneath it and what's going on there. Like, I think that's what exists through pretty much most of his work, at least the work that I've seen, and I think this movie, Wild at Heart, which we're about to cover, is kind of like that on a bit of a larger scale, like just throughout, the roads of America. But I think it's there's a sincerity to his work that it doesn't come across as just artsy for the sake of being artsy, and ooh, and there's a genuine feeling that people end up connecting to. You get a lot of feeling through Lynch's work, versus other ones. It's like you're watching images that don't communicate anything to you, but you sit there and you go, "Oh, I guess I should get it, right?" Like, I feel like that's my biggest like takeaway from watching a bulk of David Lynch's work, is that there is a real meaning and purpose behind it, and there is a story going on. It's just not something that it's just not going to be told in a coherent plot sense.
Or it's not going to be told to you right away. So you need to like, like retain those like quick images or like, call it jump cuts, like even like for like certain like weird things that like are seemingly not like don't have anything to do with the plot, but then like you realize that they will reoccur at one point or another. So like it's all about
It's like
it.
similar motifs, and like, I feel like for me personally, I feel like the less I have that signature dream style, the more I can appreciate David Lynch in general. Because like when going back to like a movie like The Straight Story, like I was just so caught away by like just all the human emotion that like he was able to bring out there, to the point that like I didn't expect to ever cry during a David Lynch movie, but here I was, and I was just like, oh my God, this is just hauntingly beautiful. The way it goes about like the Americana and like the perseverance of men under, stubbornness when they want to do what they need to do.
And I think a prevalent thing amongst all of Lynch's work that I've seen is that he always gets such great performances out of his actors, like in such a maybe in a way that you didn't realize they could. Like, I always think of, go back to the Naomi Watts scene, the audition scene in Mulholland Drive, and it's such a masterful performance. It's so excellent. And Naomi Watts even said she had been floating around Hollywood for 10 years. She sat down with David Lynch and he saw something in her that she didn't even know that she had, and he was able to like help bring that out of her. And I think all of his frequent collaborators who have spoken out since his passing, it shows a testament to the character of the man himself. That's our little tribute to David Lynch, over, I guess, kind of half what did we watch recently, slash a nice little touching tribute to David Lynch at the
I'm sure
top.
he'd be real proud.
I'm sure.
He was an avid
Sonny.
listener.
But anyway, this is Wild at Heart.
Incline. Now your gift with any $30 obsession.
We got some dancing to do.
From David Lynch, the director of Twin Peaks, comes this summer's wildest love story. Newsweek calls it spectacular and funny.
You
got me hotter than Georgia asphalt.
USA Today says it's a must-see.
You really are dangerously cute, baby.
And the Chicago Tribune calls it stunning.
Rockin' good news.
David Lynch's Wild at Heart. Rated R. Starts Friday, August 17th at theaters nationwide.
Remember the days of...
So this was Wild at Heart. This movie follows lovers, Lula and Sailor, who are passionate in love, whose mother does not approve of their love, and the chase to escape to find the golden land of Hollywood, California. For you guys, what was your kind of overall takeaway of Wild at Heart? Because we've talked a lot about Lynch, but we haven't talked about this movie at all.
Yeah. First impressions was this is a movie that just like felt like very much in the vein of like so many 90s slurs I just love, or 90s like alternative movies, like, you know, early Tarantino and stuff like that. To the extent of this movie just one way or another just rocked. I think it was so much fun performances. The chemistry between Nick Cage and Laura Dern alone is just so captivating throughout this movie, where it just really hooks you in and sinks you into the movie, into the world. And just the fact you have so many just like heat check performances, like Willem Dafoe doesn't show up until nearly like 78 minutes into this movie and is fantastic and just such a great little scuzzball in a way that he's like not always been this type of scuzzball.
Great little scuzzball.
And also on that part of that chemistry, Dern suggested to Nicolas Cage actually that they drive to take a road trip to Las Vegas before production started on the movie, just so they could get acquainted, so they could talk and just like kind of start to feel that chemistry out. And you can definitely feel that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very prevalent through this. This movie, I Lynch gets a lot of talk for being like confusing. I felt like this one was like very straightforward.
Yeah, this is definitely straightforward, straight ahead. You know, there wasn't anything really confusing about it other than maybe the Wizard of Oz scenes, but even then it wasn't as surreal as like anything we've seen in other Lynch movies we covered, especially like Mulholland Drive.
I mean, my first immediate impression, just being the English major that I am, only thing I got my degree in there, was this is just Romeo and Juliet on speed. If you think about it, you know, you have these star-crossed lovers with the forbidden love, and they mother's like, okay, like you are not to see him again like 20,000 times. And then what's the first thing that she does when she gets out of jail? Lulu fucking hops into a convertible and travels cross country with the guy. And then, you know, they literally are just chasing them cross country to try and find them and stop them from whatever antics they may or may not get into. But, you know, the Romeo and Juliet on speed, the key word takeaway there is on speed, because, you know, Diane Ladd's character, Lulu's mother was equally as crazy, probably if not more mentally unstable than Lulu.
Yeah.
You know, you come to find, like, because at first immediate impression of this movie, you're like, all right, yeah, so, like, you know, this is her mother, and, like, she's looking out for her daughter from a man who manslaughtered somebody, even if it was out of self-defense. Killed him in a brutal
way. Yeah. She was the one that caused it.
She was the one who paid him to the guy to
so
kill
she
him.
Hated him before that.
Yeah, no, but then that's the thing, is that you don't find that out until later, which makes it like even more fucked up. So, you know, like she ends up becoming sort of like, you know, like what's it called? She ends up basically like being like, you know, contradicting herself. That's what it is. I'm looking for the words there.
Yeah.
So she ends up contradicting herself by being more crazy. And, you know, you come to find that she actually loses her sanity more and more as the plot goes on. You know,
well, this is where like the great Lynchian things like leak out into this. The one scene of Diane Ladd just like in her bathroom mirror, and just like nail polish all over her face, just covered in red, or lipstick, just like screaming, and just like, it's like so surreal. It was one of those things where like you're like watching, you're like, oh wait, what the fuck just happened?
And for those following along at home, because we're out of context, when Sailor and Luna run away, Diane Ladd plays Marietta, the mother. She hires a private detective who's her on-again, off-again boyfriend, played by Harry Dean Stanton. Always lovely to see him pop up to chase them down, but she's not convinced he's going to do it. So then she uses her criminal connections to put a hit down on them. And this is the point of her regret, is when she's breaking down in the mirror, wanting to call off the hit. And it was such a great scene. And for those who don't know, Diane Ladd is actually Laura Dern's mother. So there's definitely
Is
a
that
lot of,
right?
yeah.
I didn't know that.
I had no idea about that. She was
I just
great, though. I
thought it was
mean,
good casting.
so she was nominated for an Academy Award for this performance. If we want to break down like who she went up against real quick. So Diane Ladd for Wild at Heart, Best Supporting Actress. This is 1990, I think. And she went up against Annette Bening for The Grifters, Lorraine Brasco as Karen in Goodfellas, Marty McDonald Dancing with Wolves, and then the person who won, Whoopi Goldberg for Ghost. So that's just like a quite a tight race. I mean, I haven't seen Ghost, but I've seen the at least Goodfellas and Dance be right up there with Lorraine Brasco. It's just great company. What a tight race right there. Do
Yeah,
you
it
guys think that
definitely.
she deserved the Oscar or no?
I don't know. I haven't seen Ghost since like I was 14 years old and it was on TNT one day. But it was a really great performance. And one of the things I loved about it is how ambiguous the mystery behind it all. Like, what ignited Sailor to have to be on the run, and why did his mother want to kill him? Because we get flashbacks to the day at this party that they were at. How the mother tries to pin him down in the bathroom and is like, "I want to have sex with you," and he's like, "No." But the
Yeah,
reason
there's a
she,
lot of there's a lot of back and forth with that, and let me know your guys' impressions here. But I think that it was more of a I can because I will, or I'll do it because I can. And then
yeah.
once the gears were in motion, she started having regret. Like obviously, she comes from
Oh,
money,
100%. She started having regret. She didn't want. She. I don't think she had the regret about Sailor, but I think she had more of the regret about
putting the hit out.
Harry Dan. No, on Harry Dean Stanton, because she put two hits out. It was two
That's also
silver. It
true.
was
Yes.
two silver dollars.
That's right.
And I loved that like underbelly. It really reminded me of like Mulholland Drive, where you have the Hollywood system and the man in the suit, and just like how ominous it is, this like underbelly thing where they work for silver dollars. I guess John Wick took some notes from Wild at Heart for its system there,
Yeah.
with Mr. Reindeer.
A
Um,
nice fun little
little bit.
system they have there.
And we have no idea what they do either. It is never explained. All we are communicated is that Lulu's mother and father and her associate Angelo were all involved with Mr. Reindeer, and that's what led to Lulu's father's death. And it's very I it just it's just the way he creates the world, and it's the vision of the underworld itself. Like, I go back to even something like Blue Velvet, not to spoil it for Steve because I know you want to ultimately end up watching it, but there is an underbelly there, and there's one scene in that movie in particular where the cast of characters get together, and it's quite zany, but it's a lot of fun. And it's his way of like communicating that, like, in a white picket fence house, there's more going on that you don't know what's going on in each household and who these people actually are. You just have the impression of the front lawn itself.
No, but I love that because you get to see everything at face value, but then you can make your own interpretations once you dive deeper, and it's never exactly as you portray it, and that's what's great about the ambiguity of the cinematography that Lynch always does. So it's a classic Lynch movie, but it's also still very much like an action thriller, so to speak, if that makes sense. Like even if you'd call it that, because. I like yes, it was very much a heart racing movie, but as as great as the plot was as far as it being straightforward is concerned, to follow, I still didn't really know how it would end. You know, like that's what really kind of kept me going was that, like, yeah, this is a very straightforward plot. It's not anything that I've like never seen before, but I still have no idea how this is going to play out. You know, I don't know if it's going to be a happy ending or a sad ending, like, you know, what's going on there. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lynch was just good at like, you know, keeping up the pace and of all this. This is based on a novel by Barry Gifford. Trying to think if I know anything else he's written. But you know, David Lynch pretty much like saw the book or read the book and he's just like, I need to do this.
You can't read, Tommy. Stop lying.
I can't read, but David Lynch can. It could.
Well,
So
so his producer on Twin Peaks, because this was right after he finished the pilot episode of it,
yeah.
handed him the book and saying, "Hey, I'm thinking of directing this. Would you mind? Would you want to executive produce this?" Lynch goes, "Well, what happens if I read it and I want to direct it?" And then he read it and he wanted directed it. So he ended up being the one to direct the movie itself. I want to read something to you guys here because this is the review from the time that it came out from Jonathan Rosenbaum at Sight and Sound magazine. Perhaps the major problem is that despite Cage and Dern's best efforts, Lynch is ultimately interested in only in iconography, not characters at all. When it comes to images of evil, corruption, derangement, raw passion, and mutilation, Wild at heart is a veritable cornucopia. I'm curious what your one sentence I'm curious at here is no characters at all. And I think the big thing we kind of haven't talked about yet is Sailor and Lulu, Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern's characters. How did you feel the characters were written and did you feel that they were adequate, like they were adequate characters themselves, or did you feel like they were cartoonish parody kind of characters?
I think it toed the line really well, in a way, but I think that, you know, what you saw at the part of it is just really just their romance itself and how much they cared for each other, how much they're there for each other. I like that this movie didn't start off with like their mute cute or whatever, where, like, you know, oh, they saw each other in a bar one night at a rock club and then they fell in love. We just go immediately to like the first time that he gets attacked by Laura Dern's mom. In a way that just drops you right in the middle of the story where you're like, okay, cool, like this is where we're at. And I think you just see the chemistry of them and like see, like, you know, what they're like out and about. I love the one scene where they're at the metal club together and like how they could see just the dynamics of the relationship where like Laura Dern will probably get flirted with by some random guy and then Nicolas Cage will be there just to beat the shit out of the guy and, you know, make an example of him, which amazing scene. I love the band also.
I know.
They're just like, yeah, we can do
All
the Elvis
speed
song.
metal. Like,
Yeah.
of course you would love that. Yeah. Like, I loved it too. Like, you know, as soon as you hear like them say, like, we're gonna go out and go dancing, like you're immediately thinking of like, you know, late 80s, early 90s
I
club
thought this is
scene.
gonna be like swingers, where also it's gonna be like swing music, and they're gonna be like swinging together and stuff like that. Whereas like I was like, yeah, like, is that the 90s? I was like, wait, that was not for a couple more years. That's actually a real speed metal band, apparently called Power Mad.
Oh,
So.
you would have looked it up. I was going to ask you if you did because the music was very good.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll,
also in
I'll,
that scene, they're in the bedroom, and then she just starts like jumping up. Laura Dern starts jumping up and down on her feet going, and then it just hard cuts to the same feet in the nightclub going up and down.
Oh,
I was like,
great transition.
oh, just great. I love a good transition in a movie. That's just another example of a great one. But Steve, for you, like you're the English major here. Tommy and I are not English majors, so you should be able to give us an adequate criticism of these characters here. You're definitely not out of practice or anything.
Way to put me
I
on
think it's the first time you brought up your
the
English major in anything.
Yeah, I have no idea about that,
So
but
we talk about
you're the
Whitewater.
one. Oh, I definitely have before. If you go
Hey
back to the
guys, I'm an
Fear
English
and
major.
I def if you go back to the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas one, I definitely brought it up at least once because I
Just
read the book
slightly.
there. But it wasn't even for school. I read that for pleasure, which I rarely
I
do.
read for pleasure too. That's my English major.
Actually, the last book I read was Fight Club, and that was only because like I love the movie. So yeah, it's just basically all movie-based books until the day I die. And now that
How
I've
did you
graduated,
feel the characters came up then? Same question to you.
you know, like basically the whole thing about it is that, like, you know, when you're looking at a movie, and even if you're an actor in a movie, the first thing you want to like kind of wrap your head around is what's the character's motivation in the entire movie. And, Sailor and Lulu's characters were purely codependent on one another. So basically, my whole synopsis on their whole character is they would do anything for one another, and it ends right there. Other than that, it's like they're just trying to find salvation. They're trying to find peace for each other. That's why I kind of referenced the whole Romeo and Juliet thing. They're star-crossed lovers. Everything and anything that stands in their way is trying to break them up in one way or another, whether it be their family, whether it be Willem Dafoe in that janky ass fucking Texas town or whatever, or anything else throughout that movie that stands in their way, tries to break them up. But their entire motivation is to stay together because they are madly in love no matter what. So basically, that was my full interpretation of it, is that their motivation was purely on each other. And that basically complemented who they were as sort of characters, and that just theme just kind of stretches
Well,
out throughout the whole movie.
that's why it's good that we don't see them meeting beforehand, where basically their lives really didn't begin until they met each other.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, I think a big part of it is the damage that both of them have. Like Cage tells us that, his mother died from smoking when she was four, and his father at some point died from alcoholism. He basically didn't he went from juvie to juvie. At the parole hearings, they would always say he didn't have much parental guidance growing up. And Lulu was assaulted by her, raped by her uncle. And then her father was lit a fire.
Yeah, which was also lightly glossed over, which was kind of suspicious because I thought it was going to be big theme that was going to kind of come together at the end, but it really doesn't.
Well, did they reveal that Nick Cage was there, that he saw it happen?
Yeah, Nick Cage was there. And my question is, because they say that the uncle who raped Laura Dern died in a car crash that went on fire 3 months later, and they're clearly involved in some criminal organization that Cage was also involved with, presumably at the time. Was Nick Cage responsible for the uncle's death unbeknowingly?
I mean
I think
that
that's what was I think that's what was implied.
I think
That's
that I think that
I
is what's
felt
implied,
I
but I think
so did
it's
I.
what raises an eyebrow because it's ambiguous, sort of you
I
don't know
didn't
100%, but you kind of have a inkling to it, and that's sort of why he feels this he feels like he has to be there for her throughout her entire life because it's almost like he feels like he owes it to Lula that he needs to kind of make up for his wrongdoings, He's indebted to her.
I think partially I felt like the dad on fire was just a kind of strictly plot point and a little bit of character intertwined together. It was strictly for what is going to ignite the mother hating Nicolas Cage so much, hating Sailor, and it's because she knows that he knows that she lit her husband on fire to get out of a marriage because she was having an affair. Like that was my takeaway from what that plot beat was.
It's
No.
so I can see that too again. But also it's just the fact of how insane the mom is that you can believe almost any shit that she does, where it's just like, yeah, she probably did that. She probably fucking killed some people like that. She probably got out of a marriage because of that.
Well,
So
yeah, yes and no, because she always knew that she could without but there's always that hesitation behind her putting out hits on people. So there's always that where she always knew that she could, but there's always it called into question on whether or not she had in the past. And I feel like the kind of guilt behind all of that really stems from the fact that she really never had before. And then after she had sent out the silver dollar and said, all right, this is set in stone, there's no going back anymore. Now we have this point where she's starting to feel remorse and feel regret. All right, this is my daughter, where I'm getting put into a dangerous situation because I was fearful that she was already in a dangerous situation to begin with. Now I run the risk of putting her in an even more dangerous situation because I know that she is with Sailor. So now when that hit gets put out, I know that she may or may not be put in the crossfire.
Well, it brings me back to like what I was thinking. Like, what was like the main motivation for how much she hated like Nicolas Cage, how much she hated Sailor? Because like it didn't seem like he was dangerous until he got attacked. He was only dangerous once he got provoked. Really, I
Yeah,
mean,
but
he
she
only.
also witnessed him murder somebody with his bare hands. Like
Yeah,
that.
that she tried to murder though. That she tried to set up to murder
Yeah, but
him.
it goes past, it goes beyond strictly murder. He ruthlessly beats the shit out of the guy in the
Yeah,
first
yeah,
minute of the
yeah.
movie.
He's like,
Like that.
welcome to the movie. He starts bashing his fucking
It
heads
wasn't
in.
like he like it wasn't like the knife came out and he just accidentally hit his head on a pole and he got, framed for manslaughter. Like, no, he killed that man with fire in his eyes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's two prong, right? Like, probably not the guy you want your daughter to be dating. He's the quint Cage is the quintessential bad boy in this movie.
But that's all
Oh,
I
yeah.
chalked it up to, man. Is that
No, it's
probably
because
not, yeah, probably not the guy you want your daughter to be dating, somebody who's capable of like a murder to that degree.
no, it's
Or
they
murder
talked
in
about it in the
general.
they talked about it in the bathroom. It's because they he she knew that he knew about the murder of the father. So they like he didn't she didn't want her daughter to have any knowledge that she was anywhere remotely involved with his murder.
Yeah, but
Or
also knowing Nicolas Cage and how infatuated she was with Lula, I don't think that that knowledge would have ever gotten out because that would have run the risk of ruining their relationship because Sailor was still very much in love with her.
but it did get out because he had to try to explain being like, why are we on this road? And that's ended up with pushing him to tell her information he probably would have kept vaulted up.
Yeah.
And he talks about this on the long ride to ultimately Big Fish, Texas. They were trying to go to California. They make a pit stop in New Orleans, which is fun little scenes, but ultimately more about their relationship than anything. Until they see a car crash on the side of the road. With one of the few Twin Peaks notables, Sherilyn Fenn, as the survivor of a car crash. But it kind of makes a tonal shift in the movie from there, like where it goes from like everything's good, they're in lover's bliss, to ending up in Big Fish, Texas, where I don't
There's
think.
fuck off on the welcome to Big Fish sign.
Yeah, it literally says,
Yeah,
fuck
exactly.
you.
It's like, this is what's happened.
And it's not the Emerald City, and it's amongst a lot of the Wizard of Oz references, which we briefly touched upon. How did you guys felt like that played? Because there are so many references to that movie
There
in
are.
this.
I did just like the surreal moments of like where like all of a sudden like a character, the mom, would appear as the Wicked Witch of the West. It's just like a metaphor of just like this is how it feels. Or like the end of the movie when like Glinda the Good Witch comes out. I did also
Charlie.
just like I did like there was the heartbreaking moment where Willem Dafoe, which I guess we'll touch upon the scene a little bit more, Willem Dafoe in general, after Willem Dafoe breaks into her apartment with sexual assaults her, where she starts clicking her heels,
Heels,
her red
taps her
heels over and
heels
over again.
three
And like that was
times.
just a moment I was like, oh my God, that's just like heartbreaking as
She
hell.
wishes she could go home, and
Yeah.
it's. I felt like The Wizard of Oz thematically makes a lot of sense. If you view California as the Emerald City, they're
Yeah.
trying to get there. Like Cage, even there's literally a line where Cage says, "Yeah, it ain't the Emerald City, that's for sure." And the mother, as the Wicked Witch of the West, the one trying to stop them from getting there. And there's a lot of imagery of, there's literally imagery of her on a broom, is in a vision with the hat. You see the silver ball there. You have Cheryl Lee at the
Yeah.
end coming down as Glinda the Good Witch, like literally in the bubble. It's not trying to be subtle about it or try to
And
hide
then
the fact
no,
that it's an
that was the
homage.
climax of the movie.
Yeah.
That was literally it. That was what was the quote? Because I don't have it in front of me,
It
but
was like,
that.
oh, like, you need to be like good or ever like that, or like you need to
No,
abandon Laura Dern.
it was about love. It
It
was
was
like, you
about
know.
love, because Cage goes back to prison. We'll touch upon it. He goes back to prison. He has a son now with Lulu. It's been 6 years, and he's like, I shouldn't be in your life. I'm just trouble, and walks away. And then gets assaulted from by six guys with he starts by introducing them with hello and a very
Hard F word. That's
hard
not
F
hard.
word.
Hard F
Yeah,
word.
it's not, and it's not fuck. I'm telling you that much. It's a bit derogatory.
There's only two F words here, guys. We think we've narrowed it
Yeah,
down.
but it's fun to, it's
Yeah.
fun. But Steve, we're having fun playing around, but beating around the bush. You know, that's what they do on
This
Seinfeld.
movie,
This is what podcasting is all about.
this movie does everything but beat around the bush. All right. We might as well just say it at this point. I'm not going to, though, because I respect your podcast.
Steve just gets us canceled immediately. Defunded.
But if this were my podcast, I would say it, God damn it. No. So yeah,
Go
but
ahead. Go ahead. Say
no, so like basically, like you basically fucking just says the F word. I'm not gonna say it because I'm not gonna get canceled because your mom watches this. But calls a
She's
bunch of
a
fags. All right, I
wizard.
said it. Calls a
Yeah.
bunch of fags. I said it. Like a bunch of bundled up sticks is what he called them. Okay? That's what he said. And that led to a fight.
This is where the
He
edit
gets
button
knocked
comes in
out.
right
He
here.
gets knocked out.
And this is gold.
This is gold. He gets knocked out, and then he sees Glenda the Good Witch. And it's killing me that I don't remember the quote. Ah. But like it's the whole thing, and it really just brings the whole theme together. It's like, don't let love stop you from achieving what you want to do, or something, or don't let like
Use the
don't
love
let
that you have to get what you achieve. Don't run from what you actually
don't run
want.
away from
Well,
love. That's what it
one of the
is.
quotes, one of the quotes is, "If you're truly wild at heart, you'll fight for your dreams." And his dreams, obviously, is Lula, and like, you know, being in a committed relationship, staying, and you know, being together with this woman. So we haven't talked about him yet. What a Willem Dafoe performance!
Big, I
Just
couldn't
the
stop
whole.
staring at his teeth.
Oh
Oh,
yeah,
God.
those
The teeth alone,
dentures were
the like,
unbelievable. They're just gnawed
oh.
off. It was like imagine having
Yeah.
all of your teeth removed and just having the little nubs there, like.
Literally sandpapered them down, man. It was not good.
No,
Oh.
it certainly wasn't good. Willem Dafoe as Bobby Peru, just like an iconic Lynch villain. You know, he comes in and they're staying at the worst motel, whatever that place was, the worst place on earth you could be. They're sitting around drinking. Jack Nance makes a nice little cameo, just like as a obscure guy talking about dogs barking. And when he walks in, it's so commanding. And it's just like they were talking about a battle he was in Vietnam. And it was like, oh, yeah, no, that was the one where he took care of the women and the children, too. It's like, oh, okay, this guy's, not good. This
Really,
is a bad human being.
truly insane.
True, true.
I
But
found
it's
what
just
I
the amount of menace that he has throughout the movie, and even like in the big scene before journey he has of just like the weird, just like allure that Willem Dafoe has at the same time while being the biggest creep you ever see, where he's just like torturing people in that one way, where he's like just like the psychologically tortures victims, where it's just like, yeah, I'm gonna really fuck you up and make you think about this. Pencil,
What?
the pencil mustache
Yeah, and the
is.
pencil mustache too. Like I was just laughing my ass off when I just whenever saw his mustache. And also, what a last fucking way to go out. What a fucking death scene. I'll just reach, like essentially just accidentally kills himself with a shotgun. The head blows up. I was like, oh my fucking God, I love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it before then, but definitely that was the blaze of glory there. He went out with a bang, and that was definitely a massive plot point there. And rightfully so that he'd go out with a bang, considering like he kind of like inserted himself as a character very forcefully, to say the least. Just to run it back about 10 seconds, I found the quote, "If you're truly wild at heart, you'll fight for your dreams," is what the Good Witch said to
Yeah,
Nicolas
that's
Cage.
I mentioned
And
earlier. Who was
yeah.
played by nice cameo by Cheryl Lee, Laura Palmer.
Yeah. But
And this is like
you got the
her.
title right there in that quote. And
Yeah.
like, but also at one point she basically says, like, don't let love stop you, which is like kind of what we covered as well. But that
Yeah,
was basically the whole motivation for him to run back. And thankfully he caught up to her in
well,
the dead of traffic.
So the Bobby Peru Laura Dern scene,
Bobby Peru, though.
it was very, very intense, where he comes in to use the bathroom and then sexually assaults her.
It's painfully slow too.
It's pain. It's painful.
It
You see,
lingers.
it lingers for so long. What was your guys' like guttural reaction to it? And I want to say, did you
Literally,
think it was necessary? But like,
it overstayed its welcome, but I think they did that on purpose.
yeah, that's part of the point of just like they wanted to show just how like trapped Lord Grimley really found this moment without Nicolas Cage being right there too.
How dependent they are on each other.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
like the second that like Willem Dafoe's character is left alone with her, he's immediately just gonna be like the biggest fucking creep in the world.
And
And
then it's juxtaposed by him coming to finding Cage, who was working on his car, having a couple of beers, and being like, hey, you need money to, get out of here. Why don't you work a robbery with me? Whereas, Lulu's there with him, right? Like all the trouble goes awry when they're not together for them in this story. When they're not together, everything falls apart.
Yeah, exactly. Which kind of goes on the whole them being codependent theme, which is the motivation of both of their characters, that you can't have one without the other. When you do, complete disarray happens. And I mean, as far as the Bobby Peruse scene is concerned, I mean, for fuck's sake, as soon as he enters the fucking room, it's just immediately uncomfortable, and you know he's gonna make a move. Like even when he says, "I'm gonna take a piss bad, can I use your head?" And he's like, I don't mean your head, head. I'm not gonna piss on your head. Like, why would you even say that? Like, you, like,
It's
fuck.
one of those like, oh,
Immediately.
it's one of those like, oh, we all knew what you meant, man. Kind of situations. And she's dressed for someone who is sick, it's like morning sickness, dressed rather scantily, I would say.
I wouldn't even call it morning sickness when you find out why she's really sick.
Well, it's pregnancy.
Exactly. But you don't know that, like, I mean, you know
Yes, you
that like
do.
right before that scene, but you like just find
You
out.
just got that
Yeah,
information
like
that she was
just before
pregnant
that.
with his
But
child.
what's interesting is that Bobby Peru knew all the entire time. You
And
know?
he uses that information on Sailor, on Cage, to go and do that. Meanwhile, he was the guy who got the call to put the hit on him, to kill him. He got the
That's
silver dollar.
Playing both sides of the silver dollar,
Well,
and that's
that it was a way to do it, to put him in a position where he could quote unquote trust him. And you get into the they go to rob a feed store for what is it, $5,000?
and he was only supposed to get 250 out of it,
Yeah, and I mean,
or not 250,
what a great scene. You
2500.
have Isabella Rossellini, who we barely touched upon, who Cage knew from back in the day. They had worked together. And her and Bobby Peru are dating each other. But let me ask you, when Cage gets back to the room, why do you think Lulu didn't tell him what Bobby did?
She was still like scared in the moment, like she
Yeah,
wasn't
she was
immediately.
traumatized.
She was still traumatized from all the things that just happened right there. It's like way too soon to like go after it, and this felt different than like things at the metal club when like a random guy just innocently danced with her or like was maybe a little rough with her. But this
I
just
think
felt just a whole different
it was
degree.
try, and I feel like part of it was to protect him from getting in trouble. Like,
I
I don't
think
want
that.
you to be the madman that kills this guy and then you end up in prison again.
Yeah, but like I think that she tried to tell him. There were a few instances where she tried to say, I don't think you should be working with this guy in so many words without saying what transpired in the room earlier that day, because she knew that if she let that information up, that he would immediately go into the next room and kill the guy, you know? And basically, he comes back to the room and he's like, upset, like, that he's like
He has
getting
to
into
do this.
this.
They have 40 bucks left. Like, they need the money. They need it quick
So
because they do not want to stay in big. Nobody wants to stay in Big Fish, Texas.
he's already upset for one reason or another. I mean, if I'm remembering it correctly, they their last interaction kind of ended in like sort of a fight, and so he was already upset to begin with. And then you have all this that transpired, and she knows that this could be enough to put him over the edge and get him back into jail again. And all she knows based off of what Sailor told her, was that I'm cooking up something with Willem Dafoe. And she's like, you better not get in the bed with that guy. He's a bad guy. Like, he's not who he thinks he is. And in Nicolas Cage's head, like, he knows that his best interests are in mind with her, but he also knows that he has to do this, to your point, Tim. But there's also a lot more that she's not telling him that he's not reading into because of how blindly
Distracted he
engaged he
is.
is. Yeah, and distracted. It's
For
correct.
people who are so in sync with each other, it's the moment in the movie that they're out of sync that everything goes awry. Yeah, so the last thing we got to touch upon here is the bank heist, which is that great little sequence of them going to get the seed with Isabella Rossellini, Willem Dafoe, Nicolas Cage. And I love the tension of it because, you know, it's a classic Hitchcock, right? Like, the audience knows the bomb's under the feet, the characters do not know that. Cage does not know that Willem Dafoe is there to kill him. And what neither of them know is that a cop has, in Lubbock, Texas, has decided to slow down and just talk to Isabella Rossellini quickly. Like, what were you guys feeling during that moment, during that exchange?
Oh,
That this
definitely.
is
Yeah, that this is it. Like all of Sailor's fears are coming to fruition here. You know, cop, as soon as the cop pulls up at the absolute worst time, it's just like, okay, like this is basically everything that he feared is coming together. And this is just karma working its finest right now.
Did you think he was going to die?
I didn't think he was going to die because I knew that there was still like, 45 minutes of the movie left or a half hour of the movie left. So
I didn't
I
have the clock
wasn't.
going, so I didn't know.
Yeah,
Yeah,
no.
I wasn't sure that Willem Dafoe was going to die more than anything. I thought that he was going to be a constant like thrown on their side. I was shocked how quickly that part wrapped up. In a way, like how neatly it did, where it's just like, yeah, he killed himself. He actually killed himself. So,
Well, he didn't.
whatever.
Well, he killed himself after he got shot by the cop. But he was shooting at the
Yeah.
cop, so I wasn't sure. Like, is he going to kill the cop, and then it's going to be like, I wasn't sure if this was going to change into a chase scene, which doesn't really feel like Lynch's forte. Which kind of made me excited, to be honest. But like, oh, Lynch directing a chase scene—that doesn't seem like something he would do.
Yeah, almost like an action-heavy moment of Lynch where it's like, oh,
And I know
okay.
you, Tommy. I know you mentioned it before, but that self shot is like, it was so unrealistic. It was such a wild,
It
just
was
like,
amazing. It made me die laughing.
it was like taking a soccer ball on a trampoline and just spiking it up. That's what he did with his brains. It was amazing. It was so
Yeah.
cartoonishly gory.
And
It was so funny.
apparently in
You don't
Europe,
see
they
that.
censored it a little bit. In Europe, or the other way around, for American audiences, in order to secure our rating, they had to like put some like smoke cloud around it or anything to like obscure like the fucking head. But still, what a gore effect!
That's so
I
surprising. I
actually did
didn't.
read that. Yeah,
That's
to
so
avoid an
surprising.
X rating in the U.S., David Lynch added a smoky haze and spark impact on the shots where Bobby Peru shoots himself with a shotgun to blow his head off. The second shot has some smoky haze on it to hide a chunk of his head flying through the air. Like, so basically, like, I mean, this is 1990. So, like, even like,
Yeah, but
for
it's
the.
surprising because, like, of all the with all we and we haven't really touched it, but there's a decent amount of sex in this movie. It's the violence that makes that they have to change for the X rating in the United States. That feels like that would be
Yeah.
the things that they would have to edit for in the United States, not the
I feel like
violence.
I feel like if anything there's going to be edited in the United States would be all the sex scenes
That
for the
same. That's yeah. That's
yeah.
exactly what I'm
Yeah.
saying.
Yeah. Like they just like need to cut out like some
I
of this
mean,
like
like,
okay,
look,
well, Laura
there
Dern, Nick Cage, just cut it out.
look, there was a multitude of sex scenes. There were almost as many sex scenes as there are in the room. And that was one of the
Yeah.
first things I told Tommy because he was like, I think I'm going to watch this with my girlfriend. I'm like, I wouldn't. Like, like there's a lot of sex scenes in it, but like, they were very much like Skinamax sex scenes. You see some titties, you don't really like see fucking like
Well,
dick going in
it's
or anything
more
like that.
intimacy than anything
Yeah, yeah.
is what it's conveying, in
But
my
there's but
opinion.
it's an abundance of it,
Oh,
and
it's
that's
definitely
really
a
the
bu
point. Like, but the fucking brutal scenes are fucking brutal, you know? Like,
Not the
what?
sex
And
scenes, the violence.
just
Yeah.
to
The
touch upon
violence,
just
yeah.
like the jarringness of this and how much I just loved it. Crispin Glover's just little cameo in this movie for like a minute or two of him as like the Santa, the fucked up Santa guy. They kept on
Oh, yeah.
going. Every time I cut to Crispin Glover, I was just dying laughing. He's just like fucking, just like a little gremlin in his Santa suit, just like screaming shit out. I was like, what am I watching? I love this.
Well, speaking of performers.
I am a star. I'm a star, I'm a star, I'm a star. I am a big, bright, shining star.
Tommy, you set up my transition for me perfectly. I had to take advantage of it.
Very good. Very good. I liked it.
Who's the star of the show? Who gave the best performances? And I think this is,
Oh.
of all the movies we've covered, I think this is a really tough one here.
This
All
is
right, so
tough.
I want to start off with Nicolas Cage and his Elvis accent right here, we haven't touched upon
Oh,
yet.
and we haven't even touched upon the Elvis connection of it all.
I fucking
Oh,
loved it,
I
man.
just loved his cadence of speak. I just loved how he's always just like, baby girl, we're gonna be good. Do shit
And
like
it's
that over and
great
over again.
because, like, we touched on we actually one of the things we didn't touch on, which we normally do, is what movies you've seen recently. And as soon as I finished watching this movie, I watched Leaving Las Vegas for the first time, which Nicolas Cage is very much a drunk, and he tries to sing in that movie, and it's nowhere near as close to the Elvis impression that he gives in this movie, which is phenomenal. Oh my
Was
God,
he lip
dude.
syncing?
I doubt
I could I doubt it. I could see that being just live where he just like
I
tweaked
could
it.
see that being his voice because, like, yes, it was very much an Elvis impression, but like you could kind of hear the like Nicolas Cage like undertones in the voice there. I think that was actually him singing.
Yeah, I just love like the little quotes he has about his like snakeskin jacket over and over again, where he's like, "Thanks, but did I ever tell you this jacket represents a symbol of my individuality, and my belief in personal freedom?" And Lou was like, "Yeah, about 5,000 times. This is a couple that just knows each other's shit, but just kept on just getting like excited about the same thing over and
I just
over
looked it up, guys. That was actually Nicolas Cage singing.
Oh, perfect. Yeah,
Yeah.
perfect. So it's just Cage across the board. No, Laura Dern,
Just.
like her, like a
Laura
common.
Dern also. Laura
It's
Dern is
very
striking.
close, but
Laura Dern is.
I think the Elvis performance gives it to Nick Cage. That's
But
just
just to
me
talk about
personally.
Laura Dern, because I'm very close with this too. Laura Dern is just so much fun, so much magnetic, and a character we haven't seen her in, like, her big blockbuster roles. It's crazy to think that 3 years later she was in Jurassic Park. Definitely a breakout role. But when you think about this, so Blue Velvet came out in '86. That was like Laura Dern's real true
Yeah, she
breakout
chose. She
role.
was. She was like 17. She it was like she had to choose between UCLA or star in Blue Velvet.
She was
Yeah, she made the
17
right choice. Yeah, she was
when she made
married.
Blue Velvet. Not in this movie. Don't worry, Steve. You're
I was
like,
about to say,
I
man, do I need to
can't
get a
cover this
new
movie anymore,
IP
guys. Delete
address?
this episode. Delete the files. Delete your hard drive, Timmy.
Fuck this.
I'm throwing my computer out the window.
No, no, no. So she was 17 in Blue Velvet. Then she does a movie called a couple of movies that like I've never heard of before, called like The Haunted Summer and Fat Man and Little Boy. That's the
That
Steve
guy in the
Mucho.
little coat.
Yeah, Fat Guy in a Little Coat. So two movies that like didn't make really any money at the box office or any splash. And she comes back with a lot of Wild at Heart in a wild role. I mean, this is the first time she ever just like really was better at self-going scenes like this and playing a character that was like so against her type, where she was like, "Oh, I didn't know how to play like someone that was so like sex obsessed and everything like that." Like, and she
Like,
felt that like chewing gum got her into character more and more.
yeah.
Again, that cadence.
So I think that was because like I was thinking like when I watch these movies, I sometimes think I'm like, okay, like and early on I was like, yeah, it's Cage, like he's gonna be star of the show, but it was the shift for me for because for Lulu, it's her like very much out of lessons and her just blind love that's driving her to make all of these decisions. It's that shift when they get to Big Fish, Texas. And after the Defoe scene that we talked about, and we didn't really mention like her performance in that, which was just so like haunting and traumatized, and just how vulnerable she became after that, it really made me love that performance. And it makes you break your heart because you know what's happening here. You know that Sailor's about to go fuck it up in the next morning, and she's trying to do everything she can to get him to not make this decision while also not trying to tell him what happened because she doesn't want him to go to jail, which he ultimately does. And it was just
Yeah.
that vulnerability in that kind of performance that just like
No,
Makes me
absolutely.
almost want to make it a tie because it's like I feel like the first half is controlled by Cage. I feel like the second half is controlled by Dern.
Yeah.
I'm kind of
Well
leaning a little bit
said.
more towards Laura Dern right here because I think that like also you just need to sell like the romance right there, and she really helps bring it together. I mean, if this movie would fall apart if it was two duds in the lead, you know, if like both of them didn't have any chemistry or just didn't buy it, but she's just so magnetic and playing off him so much. I just love the parts in the movies where like Nick Cage is telling her stories and she's getting all excited. She's like, "Oh my God, tell me more, tell me more, tell me more." And when he's really by the room, it's like, "Oh my God, this is fucking hilarious."
Yeah, you know, I think that again, I think that it's definitely to Tim's point tied, but I really like the Elvis performance, so that's why I'm leaning more towards Cage. But that's literally only because of that. I'm very biased, being the music nerd that I am as well.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Ah, are you ready, comedy partner? Waka waka.
So, after this discussion, this would not lead to a Muppet adaptation. I think we could all kind of agree with that generally. But I want you to think about the scene when they're in the bed in New Orleans. And it's a shot of the bed above, and they're covered in the sheets and they're on opposite sides. And think about how funny that would be if it was just Kermit and Piggy.
I would venture to say that there's a lot of scenes that would be very funny if it were Kermit and Peggy.
Oh, imagine instead of Willem Dafoe, it's just like who's that creepy one that's like the amphibian type Muppet? You know, the one that's like all like slimy or whatever like that.
Yeah, with the
The blue
fucking
guy.
with the, oh no, not fucking the guy with the blue fucking dick nose, the
Oh,
one that
not
looks like
Sam the Eagle.
Uncle Deadly, is that his name?
Uncle
Yeah.
Dead.
No, I was
Yeah,
thinking it
look.
was the, I was
But look.
thinking he would be pro the band guy. What's his name? Professor, you know who I'm talking about. The guy with the
Dr.
golden
Teeth.
tooth. Dr.
Oh,
Teeth,
yeah,
yeah.
Dr. Teeth would be great too. But then if like, you know, at the end of the movie when like Willem Dafoe blows his head off instead of his Muppet, his head blown get blown off, you see felt go all over the place and everywhere like that as he gets shot. You see Dr. Teeth's fucked up gold tooth, and it's like, oh, what the hell?
Yeah, I don't think it would, this would never happen, and probably for the best, although it's funny to discuss.
But do you keep Nick Cage as the human because like
No,
you know
you
he
keep
practically is a
Defoe, you
Muppet?
keep
Oh,
Defoe
that's
as the,
Kermit.
you keep Defoe as the human man.
Oh,
Yeah, I
that
see
would be
Kermit in that snakeskin jacket.
hysterical. No, this could be a Muppet adaptation. First of all, you have. If you have Miss Piggy saying, "You got me hotter than Georgia asphalt," I'm sold immediately. That's hysterical. All right. Second of all,
Kermit,
you
you got me
have
fried like
if you
bacon.
have live action Willem Dafoe coming on to a Miss Piggy puppet, that is even more funny. No, fucking sign me up. I'm putting all my money into this fucking being a Muppet
By the way,
adaptation.
we didn't mention this before, but apparently Nick Cage owned that snakeskin jacket and wanted to include it in the movie, which of course he fucking owned that jacket. That's such a
Of
Nick
course
Cage
he did.
thing. Of
Hell
course he
yeah.
did.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Review time. Give me your score to time. Five. Upstairs, Steve. Let's start with you.
All right, starting upstairs. Originally I was just gonna give it a 3 out of 5, but off air I was talking to Tim, and it was one of those things where I'm like, the more I talk about this movie, the more I realize how complex it is. I'm giving it a 3 out of 5. It is definitely a straightforward plot, but there's a
Before I was
lot
going to give it a
more
3 out of
depth.
5, I decided to give it a 3 out of 5.
I gave it a three and a half out
After
of three and a half out of
you
five.
said 3
No,
out of 5,
God
dude.
damn
Again,
it. You said 3 out
all
of 5
right.
again.
Well, we're keeping. I'm giving it a 6 out of 5, bitches. Fuck you. No. Oh, 3.5 out of 5 is what I meant to say, everybody. I apologize for the inconvenience. I'm giving it that half a star after review of the play and more consensus thought on the movie. Yeah, there's a lot more layers to the movie than initially meets the eye, despite on how straightforward the plot is and like how on initial first glances you've seen like this kind of story told many a time. There's a lot of layers to it, so I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5. All right, let it be known that that half a star goes a long way. even if I did forget to mention it at first glance.
All right.
Okay. All right.
All right, Tommy.
So I really like this movie. I felt a little more straightforward than more Dave Lynch's stuff. But when he lets his like surrealism seep into this movie, it's just fun jolts of excitement. Where it's like, what the fuck am I watching? But Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern just have such great chemistry throughout this that like I couldn't help but just like be caught up in this movie, and just so many great little side performances. Where it's Crispin Glover in a demented Santa, Willem Dafoe with fucked up teeth. Or even Diane Ladd with lipstick all over her face for some reason. Just amazing movie. 4 out of 5 for me. Really fun.
Yeah,
Four.
I'm 4 out of 5 as well. A really fun movie. Really captures the, like, you mentioned it, Steve, Romeo and Juliet, that star-crossed lovers kind of phenomenon, but also seeping it with the underbelly of Americana, and just a really wild adventure. Something that, like, if you, it's very hard to try to concisely elevator pitch this movie, because it's like, it's star-crossed lovers on a road trip trying to run away from mom, but there's so much more going on underneath that, and thematically it's so strong. And it's visually stunning movie, great cinematography. I really enjoyed it. 4 to 5 for me. Upstairs, Steve, thank you so much for jumping on with us. We always enjoy having you on.
Thanks for having me on. I believe this is my 8th time being on, if I'm counting correctly, but I'm probably not.
You're
Yeah,
almost a
you're
part
getting
of the
towards the
dais.
10. Yeah.
I've become your guy's Bert Kreischer. We've said it a bunch of times. If this is the Joe Rogan podcast, I've become that. Or
Yeah.
the two no, not Two Bears, One
At least
Cave.
you
It's
don't laugh
Joe
at
Rogan.
your own, at least you don't laugh at your own jokes.
I try not to. Sometimes I give myself like the Paulie Walnuts, like, hey. Every time I say something I
Yeah,
think
it's
is
fine. You
witty,
can give
but
yourself a Polly Walnuts, but
but
where can people find you?
you already know because I say it every time on the podcast. If you follow me on Instagram, you got big underscore mooch 821. If you're really feeling adventurous and want to follow me on Snapchat, where you're getting uncut, uncensored Steve Mucciola, you got SMUCC6. All lowercase, no spaces, none of that stuff. And oh, whatever happened to TikTok? I don't know because I never downloaded that motherfucker, but it's not in existence anymore.
Oh,
Unless
it's
I'm
back up.
wrong, it's back up.
Yeah,
Wow.
that
That
was
was
less than 12 hours. That's the
I
whole
didn't
thing.
think, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't think that that would last long, but
No.
I'm still not gonna download TikTok. Sorry, everybody. Not sorry.
Me
I don't
either.
need
We're
another
missing out
one.
on the Steve Mucciola lip sync videos.
I could do that on Instagram. I could do that and anywhere that you want me to. I could even really sing. It won't sound as good as Nicolas Cage doing his Elvis impression, though. But I just have too many fucking memes in my DMs on Instagram already. I don't need another one, guys. I'm sorry. The inboxes are full. But if you want to send me some love, big underscore mooch 821. That's where you got to do it. Right there, Instagram.
And Tommy, any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
Well, once again, RIP David Lynch. Glad to do an episode on him. So, anyways, you can find us on social media at CNetPod. That's on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads. And we're also on Blue Sky, which is podcnet dot bluesky.social there.
What
And at
about
least
iTunes?
us,
What
we're
about
not.
iTunes?
I mean, our podcast you can find on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify,
It's a
wherever
big
you get your
one.
podcast, really. Leave us a 5-star review, and helps us out, helps us grow the show. And next week, Tim, we're sticking with Nosferatu.
I think so, but we'll discuss.
I mean, if it helps, I have seen the 1920s Nosferatu somewhat recently. I haven't seen the new one though. Still got to do that.
All right.
But yeah, food for thought. If you guys want more of Upstairs Steve, leave it in the
The
comments for
mooch.
the 5-star review,
Let us know on Twitter.
Let us know on Twitter. Just be like, yo, just say Upstairs Steve sucks. And if you say Upstairs Steve sucks, it's kind of like Primus sucks. Like, you know how Primus fans say
It
Primus
works
sucks?
out. Yeah, it works out.
Yeah.
It means you like
Just
him. All
say Upstairs Steve sucks. And then that means that you like Upstairs Steve. So give it a thumbs up. Let us know on Twitter, guys. Rick and Morty, 100 years.
Thank you guys so much for listening today. We will see you next time.